Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Buffalo Bills Radio Network Sports Update.
The update from One Bills Drive. The Bills ready to ship Zay Jones to the Oakland Raiders. The trade not official yet, but it will be. Trading Zay Jones, second-round pick a couple of years ago to the Raiders in exchange for a fifth-round pick in 2021. Zay Jones out of East Carolina, a tremendous record of production at East Carolina. Never was able to do it in the NFL for the Bills anyway. He was the Bills receiver in most major receiving categories last year, but did not make an impact yet this year. Seven catches, 69 yards. And the Bills got good production out of Duke Williams, who came off the practice squad and scored the go-ahead touchdown Sunday in Tennessee. So Zay Jones is gone, traded to the Raiders. Raiders GM Mike Mayock was a fan of Zay Jones coming out of college. He made that clear. He had him as his fourth-ranked wide receiver that year ahead of Juju Smith-Schuster and Cooper Kupp. Bills have signed a new player to their practice squad. Defensive end Wyatt Ray added to the Buffalo practice squad. 6'3", product of Boston College, went to camp with the Cleveland Browns as an undrafted free agent. Cut when the rosters were trimmed right before the season began. Wyatt Ray now added to the Buffalo practice squad. The New York Jets are ready to bring Sam Darnold back. He's been cleared free of mononucleosis and ready to play again. Sam Darnold will start for the New York Jets this Sunday. Titans ready to move on from kicker Cairo Santos. One day after his bad performance against the Bills, where he missed four field goals in Buffalo's seven-point win at Tennessee, his expected replacement is former Bears kicker Cody Parkey, who is the man behind the double doink that knocked Chicago out of last season's playoffs. It'll be Parkey's first shot at redemption since he was released by the Bears during the offseason. Giants say that running back Saquon Barkley is unlikely to play Thursday night against the Patriots. He did return to practice late last week, but not quite ready to play. Benjamin Watson says he's beyond disappointed after being released from the Patriots. Patriots released him late yesterday after he just returned from a four-game NFL suspension. And the 49ers might be without fullback Kyle Juszczyk. He suffered an MCL injury in last night's game. Sabres home tomorrow against, who are they playing? Montreal tomorrow night. And baseball tonight, Houston to Tampa Bay, and or American League Division Series. Houston up 2-1.
I'm going to the Sabres
7-07.
Game.
7-07. All right, tomorrow night.
I'm going to the Sabres game tomorrow night.
And you won't be stopped. You are determined.
And I'm going to catch one of those T-shirts they drop from the rafters, too.
Do they do that every game?
I don't know. I think so.
And what are you going to eat at the game, Steve? You going to eat cotton candy?
Usually I don't do that. Usually we catch a little bite beforehand, you know, go to one of the outlying establishments, have a pop before the game, and head in.
That's a nice. Pop?
Yeah, it's nice.
Soda?
Not a soda. Yeah, it's a great night. We're great atmosphere down there. It's so fun, man. I love going to the Sabres games. It's so fun. You?
I'm not going tomorrow night.
Oh, you like going there, though. Come
I do like going, yes.
Yeah, okay.
I've been a Sabres fan longer than you.
Yeah, you took a hiatus, though, for a minute. I know that, too.
Well,
so
when they did, yeah. Look, here we are. We got a Twitter poll up. I'm sorry. I had some technical issues with my little thing, trying to get that fixed.
So you can't hear Jay talking to
yeah,
us?
Yeah, which might be.
Jay's screaming at us. I don't know. You can't hear him? No,
it might be a benefit that I can't hear the producer. Twitter poll today. It's a good one. Who's the Bills' best defender through the first five games? Give us a call, 803-0550, toll-free, 1-888-550-2550. Send in a tweet. Can't take calls if I can't hear, so let's go to the tweet sheet. Brought to you by Corrigan Moving Systems, the official movers of the Buffalo Bills. Who is the Bills' best defender through the first five games? What do you got on the tweet sheet?
It says from Daryl, he says, the safety combination of Poirier and Hyde anchors the Bills' defense and allows Edmonds and others to make plays. Defense is built from back to front. Also from Tiffany, he says, I voted for Tremaine. He's been awesome so far. Would like to add Lorenzo. He's had an impact play in each game from tip passes to key sacks to clutch tackles. He's the Swiss Army knife for the best defense in the National Football League. There's a lot of meat on this. The reason we ask this question seems obvious. Who's the best Bills defender through first five games? Because they don't have any of these superstar guys. Like you said, there's no Aaron Donald. There's no Khalil Mack. There's no Joey Bosa. There's no, Richard Sherman. You know, we do have guys like Tre'Davious White. We've got Levi Wallace who's playing well. The two safeties in tandem, our safeties are awesome. But that's not a guy who stands out on the defense. Tremaine Edmonds, I think, has made a real quiet difference for the guys on the defense. You'd have to dig deep and talk to each guy on the defense to see what kind of contribution Tremaine has made to each of them and to elevating their play. Matt Milano has come back with a vengeance this season. He's made some great tackles in space, plays down the field. You remember the play that set up the Patriots' first touchdown and only touchdown offensively on the play down the sidelines. Milano had tremendous coverage, and it was a perfect throw and a great catch that beat him. And that's really the only downer play you've seen him be even a part of. And on that one, it wasn't even a downer. They made a great play. So, you know, there's a lot of names on the list when you go down this about, you know, through the first five games. And I'm going to ask you this, Murph, just for you and me before we get to the back to the tweet
sheet. I got a question for you, too, but go ahead. Right.
If you're going to go, like, secondary, linebackers, defensive front, that may be even a harder question. Which group?
Okay, and this plays into my question I got for you, and it goes back to the first tweet you just read there from Daryl about the safety combination, Poyer and Hoy.
Hyde.
Now they're throwing me Kleenexes to clean off my earpiece. he says, Daryl says, the defense is built from back to front. My question for you, Steve Tasker, can you do that and be effective? Have you seen that before? Because I'll be honest, I've thought about that the last couple of weeks.
Yeah.
What if we got a defense here? I mean, clearly they got talent on the back end. I know that. But can you build your defense from the backside to the front side? Have you seen that done before successfully?
Well, here's the thing. We had this huge debate this last offseason when we were starved for content. We kept getting people calling us, and it was the analytics guys. I don't know whether it was Steve Palazzolo from Pro Football Focus, who we had on the show one time. But there's this huge debate, and the analytics people will tell you that it's more important to have coverage than it is pressure. It helps your team more to have great DBs than it does to have great pass rushers. Yep. All right, so there's the great debate. So you're talking about building a team that way. I'd say, yeah, there's evidence to say you can build it from the back to the front. Particularly if you got quarterbacks, there's not too many quarterbacks that are as athletic as the Buffalo quarterback. You know, you go around the league, you can kind of name them. There's a few of them that can run around and do some stuff. But certainly the best ones are the ones that aren't runners but more scramblers. The guys that don't scramble to run, they scramble to throw, like Russell Wilson, Drew Brees, even Baker Mayfield when he's at his best, stepping away from pressure. So guys like that that are really effective aren't really runners. So your pressure isn't really about keeping the guy from running down the field behind man coverage. It's about making them throw the football. And particularly in this day and age, with offenses as advanced as they are, being, you know, centered around throwing the football like so many of them are, all of them are mostly, it's about offenses have more ways to combat pressure in the front than they do in the back end. There's only so many concepts you can throw at a group in the back end and not have them be able to come up with an answer. Up front, there's a lot of ways, because you can get rid of the football fast before the pressure can get there. You can run the football effectively. You can throw screen passes, whip screens. You can do end-arounds. You can do misdirection. There's a lot of things you can do to negate their ability to rush the passer. And because of that, I like the fact that maybe there's a guy out there away, and this Bills defense may be an exception or maybe an example that says, yeah, you do build your defense from back to front. So, I get it. I've heard it and seen it, so maybe it is true.
Thanks for covering for me. My earpiece works again.
I kept going.
Takes the working? Rest of the day. A couple good. Of calls here. It works. Sounds good. I don't
All
know
right,
if I
cool.
want it this
So we can take a call now?
Yes. Bruce calling from Michigan. Where in Michigan are you, Bruce? Show me on your hand. Where in Michigan are you?
So I am
Here's Michigan.
The joint of the thumb. I'm right near Detroit.
Okay. Oh, there you go. All right. Right. That says it all. Perfect.
Go ahead, Bruce. What do you
go
got?
Go ahead.
So I wanted to touch on the quote-unquote lack of offense really quick, because I do feel like there have been a couple of times that we've left points on the board, twice in the game against the Titans, where early in the game we went for it on fourth and we were in field goal range and we could have kicked a field goal. And late in the game, if we needed to, we could have scored as well.
Right.
Also, a drive with the Patriots, we could have kicked a field goal and went for it anyways. And I believe there was a couple other times earlier in the season as well. So I don't necessarily think we have a problem scoring points. I think that sometimes we just are less conservative than we used to be or don't need to. You know, you don't need to blow a team out to win. The win's a win, right?
Right, you're right.
Right, you're right. And I think you've got a head coach. And I see what you see, Bruce. And I don't think – and here's the thing, two things about what you said. I don't think it's a lack of – I'm kind of with you. I don't think it's a lack of offense, though, the way you called it. I think it's just – because they're moving the football. They're They're in the top 12 in the league at moving the football. Now, they haven't gotten in the end zone enough. We all know that. But they move the ball. And certainly there are a lot of times, particularly in the last couple of games, where this team has gone for it on fourth down. They got one last week, and then they got stymied in that same drive on another fourth down where they were going for it. So they go for it on fourth down a little more than we've seen teams do that here in Buffalo, seen teams do that in the past. I don't have a problem with that, and I'm with you. When you've got a head coach who is willing to go for it, a lot of times it's because he's got a defense that he says, you know what, even if we don't get it here, we're in their end, and we're going to, they still got to go the length of the field on our defense. So I'm with you. There have been times when they've left points on the board, and I thought that Tennessee game, that when they were going for it on fourth and they didn't get it, I thought not the quarterback sneak that got stopped, but like the fourth and three, I guess it was, Murph. Is that what I'm
saying? Sounds right.
And they elected not to go for the field goal. I was kind of iffy on that one because I thought points would be a premium. It would have put them up 3-0 in the game, so there's a long way to go. But as you said, later in that game, at the end of the game, if they would have made three of the field goals that they tried, you said they missed four in the update?
The Titans? Tennessee did, yeah.
They got one blocked. They missed three and got one blocked. So they make those three and go from 7 to 16 points. The Bills are still in field goal range at the end of that game to kick the field goal to win it at 16-14.
Do you ever think you'd be around to take a call where people said they're not going for it or they're going for it on fourth down too much?
Oh, my gosh.
You know what I mean?
Oh,
why don't they
that?
Go for it? What's the matter with them? They're so conservative.
But I think they've got really good reasons for doing it. I think they're listening to those people now, and I think they're getting some benefit from it. They're 4-1.
Yeah. You make a good point, and please help us someday. This is a plea to our coworkers here. Get not to the bottom of this, but I know, I can tell, you can tell. If you're watching closely, they are employing analytics, game type, and analytics covers a myriad of things, including evaluating how players' conditioning is and who they should draft. But in-game analytics, I think they have beefed up, the Bills have beefed up their team doing that, and I think Sean McDermott is as receptive as he has ever been towards going the way the analytics show him. And I look, I'm not saying he's, what's his name, Riverboat Ron down there, but I do think he is much more open to listening to what the numbers show him than he's ever been in 2+ years here as a Bills coach. I'd love to get to the bottom of it, get some of those analytics people on the show if we could. Probably never happened.
No.
But, and even talk to Sean, maybe.
I think you're right.
How are you using him? When do you use him?
Give us an example
of what the analytics have told you to do in a game.
It comes from his preaching to his players always about this growth mindset.
Mm-hmm.
We got to get better. We got to get better today.
And he always includes coaching.
And he says, we've got to get better. I got to get better. He was quoted this week saying, what are your things on the Bible? He goes, I'm going to self-evaluate. We got to look at how I'm doing things on game day, how we're doing things during the week, always looking to see if we can do it better, more efficiently, or completely differently to get a better result. That's all on the table all the time, it seems, with these guys. And I think the differences we see in 2019 that are so vastly different than the way they handled their game day stuff in 2017 speak to the fact that they have been critical of themselves and the way they've done it and have changed. So I think you're right. These fourth down go-for-its, I'm okay with them. Because it speaks to me that they got percentages tucked away somewhere that they're going with.
Yep. Let's go to Tom in West Seneca. Hello, Tom. Welcome to the show.
John, Steve, thank you so much for having me.
Sure.
We all agree that every fan has a right to an opinion. It's just that, from my perspective, I think that the critiquing is getting a little old now. This is a team that's 4-1. Their defense is playing phenomenal. They proved that the last two games. They held a juggernaut Brady Patriot offense to 16 points. That is saying something. And that is a game we should have won. They held the Titans to 7 points. We won 14-7. Josh Allen, he's an exciting quarterback to watch. He has all the right stuff. He can always, at any time, make something big happen because he's versatile. He can run the ball. He has great peripheral vision and a phenomenal arm. And our defense, they are playing phenomenal. And to the other callers that critique about our offense, we don't have to score 88 points to be considered a good team. That's ridiculous. We are 4-1. We're doing great. I love our defense, and I think our defense. I couldn't pick one player out and say, "Oh, it's him or him that's doing great." It's a concerted effort, and this team plays for 60 minutes with all their heart. And that being said, I would like you to comment on one thing.
Mm-hmm.
I had a question about concussion protocol. When a man, Josh Allen, was clearly knocked out in that game, and the concussion protocol, when it comes to the final decision, is it because the doctor says it's okay to play, or is the doctor and the player talk it over and they make the decision for
me? It's a doctor.
Yeah, a couple of things. The player has a say in it because he tells them what his symptoms are. I mean, he tells them how I feel. This is why I feel this. And then they all, whatever hardcore stuff they can test electronically with an EKG or whatever, not EKG, but whatever they do, that's how you do it. I mean, they whatever hard evidence they have, they evaluate and with baseline reading. So the concussion thing, the player has to be honest about his symptoms, and the doctor makes the final determination. You can't trust a player to make a medical evaluation about himself. And I was going to ask, is Tom still there?
Nope.
Okay. I was going to say, he says all this good stuff. Well, okay, if all this thing's honky-dory and we're playing great, how good are they going to be? You know, I mean, That's the question.
Let's go to Mike in North Carolina. Mike, go ahead. You're on the air with us.
Hey, thanks for taking the call. Actually, I was at the game. It was
great.
An awesome time. And shout out to Bills Mafia for sure. I mean, we were walking up and down, me and my dad, second row gate I've been to. The other one was in Jacksonville for the playoff game. Same kind of atmosphere. I mean, it was felt like a playoff atmosphere, at least from the fans. And so I'd like to nominate the 12th man as the Defensive Player of the Year for the Bills, because there were times when it got really loud in that stadium that, you know, I think Micah High talked to you guys about this, that Bills players were actually pumping up the crowd when the Titans had it on third down. I mean, I was in one of the end zones, and they false started several times on that end of the field.
Second play of the game, right?
Yeah.
You were there, second play of the game, they got a false start. That's how noisy it was down the dead end.
It was fantastic. And also, it was just funny to see. I mean, we were walking up and down Broadway and going into bars, and we got, you know, there was so much great live music, and we got, you know, the band start playing the Buffalo Bills fight song. It really just felt like a Bills atmosphere, and Nashville's a really hospitable city. Great, great place to tailgate and all that.
Yep.
Also, Jordan Phillips, I mean, who would have thought that through five games he'd be the leading guy with sacks on this defense? I mean, like, just the unsung guys. Daryl Johnson chipped in a sack. I mean, that was like a big complaint, if you even want to say it's a complaint, because I still think that the Bills defense generates pressure even without the big sack numbers. But the one thing that was missing was the sack numbers through five games, and we got five of them. And it didn't come from the marquee guys. It didn't come from Jerry Hughes. It didn't come from Trent Murphy. And it was awesome to see the middle of the defense really collapsing the pocket. And I really hope that continues. I know the Titans have struggled on the offensive line thus far this year, but I think it's awesome. I mean, I didn't expect Jordan Phillips to have four sacks. That's a good Twitter poll question. Who finishes with the sack lead on this team?
Oh, that's a good one.
Interested to see how that plays out.
That's a good one. That might you might see that.
I'm writing that. I'm writing that down.
Right now, Jordan leads the team with four. He had three the other day. Lorenzo Alexander has two. Jerry Hughes, 1.5. Bam Johnson, 1. Everybody else has just 1. That's a really good one. Thanks very much for your call, Mike.
Yeah.
Hey, okay. Steve, just switching gears here before we get to the break. We talked about Baker Mayfield earlier, and supposedly Richard Sherman's postgame comments were that he disrespected him, did not shake his hand in the pregame meeting of the captains. And Kyle Brandt talked about it. Here's what Kyle Brandt said to us in the first hour of the show about that charge from Richard Sherman. Listen to this.
There sure enough is video out there. You don't have to go far in Twitter to find it. In fact, you're showing it to your viewers right now. I'm not the detective on this thing, but it doesn't appear to be a slight. I don't see it if it's there. We can dissect it a million times, six ways to Sunday if we want. But my point on this, guys, is, you know, if Richard Sherman has a problem with Baker Mayfield violating NFL etiquette, as he put it, Well, then Richard Sherman would have really hated young Richard Sherman.
That's kind of a funny way to put it. And there's new video. We have new video evidence now. Is it a slight? Is it a snub? I don't know. Take a look. Decide for yourself. It certainly doesn't look like one. Here's a reverse angle shot. Richard Sherman, Baker Mayfield, if you're watching on MSG, they shake hands. I don't know what Richard Sherman's talking
hands.
About. Well, yeah. I don't have a problem with that. And I have a problem with Richard Sherman making an issue out of it, to be honest with you.
Yeah, they shook hands, but they didn't come in for the man hug, you know, the sideways hug.
Oh, okay.
And maybe Baker Mayfield, stood stiff and didn't, you know, kind of made a little something there in that handshake. But I didn't. Yeah, there's nothing there that generates a tweet for me.
Are we going to start grading people on the quality of their pregame handshake? Is that what we're talking about?
He shook hands with him, and then
here's what Sherman said. The quote, Michael Silver, NFL.com, who loves being in the middle of this stuff. The quote from Richard Sherman via Michael Silver. Richard Sherman said, "What's amazing and annoying was him not shaking hands at the beginning. That's some college blank. It's ridiculous. Shaking hands with your opponent, that's NFL etiquette." Well,
he did it.
He did shake hands.
Richard, maybe he didn't give him a big enough handshake or whatever, but he did shake hands with Richard Sherman. He gave the other 49er captain a big, you know, big man hug too. You know what I mean? So there was, I mean,
you really were talking about
he
this?
He was all right.
He's fine.
Here's the thing. And I had some teammates, most notably our Friday guest Thurman Thomas, or Thursday guest. Was he coming in Thursday?
Thursdays.
Thursday guest Thurman Thomas. Thurman had the ability to churn up, anger about the smallest things. For instance, Thurman was incensed over an article in the paper on Super Bowl week that called him the greatest all-around running back in the league.
He got mad about that.
Right. He got mad about that headline. And so this is kind of what I think Richard Sherman did. He didn't give him quite the same greeting as he gave everybody else, did maybe Baker Mayfield, or maybe he did, and Richard Sherman chose to see it a different way. But he wasn't perfect in his etiquette in the pregame, so Richard Sherman took it, internalized it, used it as motivation, and picked him off during the game and then called him out postgame. I get that.
That's, what do you get? That Richard Sherman did
that? That's what guys do.
Who? Richard Sherman?
Richard Sherman. Now,
that's
now,
what bad guys the, do. That's what step, jerks do. Yeah.
The step too far is saying that's why you did it, because it makes you look like a goober. Like, well, what are you doing? I mean, the guy shook your hand. I mean, what do you want him to do? What do you want him to genuflect and kiss your ring?
What do you want?
I mean, what do you want? Kiss your Super Bowl ring? I mean, he's not going to do that. I think he used it for motivation. It obviously helped him because he picked the guy off, but he's reaching. He's really reaching.
Stupid. Why are we talking about this?
Because it's kind of
funny. You know why? Because it's a bye week.
It's kind of funny.
We're going to hear from Sean McDermott and hear from you when we return. Come on back. One Bills Live presented by Kalata Health. We're in the Seneca studio at One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
We do this every Tuesday on the show. We announce the AdPro High School Football Coaches of the Week for the weekend that just passed. We got two of them. One for Section 6 here in the Buffalo area, head coach Jason Beckman of the Amherst Tigers. Coach Beckman led his team to a 26-16 win over longtime rival Sweet Home in the Big Cat Bowl. Last time Amherst beat Sweet Home was 2001. Jason Beckman, the Section 6 High School Coach of the Week, AdPro High School Coaches of the Week. Section 5, Rochester, the Coach of the Week from Alexander High School, Tim Sawyer. He led his team to an 11-8 win over Red Jacket last week. They're 5-0 in the year. Ty Woods, Len Alexander, 29 carries, 138 yards rushing, their only touchdown. And Tim Sawyer, Alexander coach, is the Ad Pro Sports Section 5 Coach of the Week. Congratulations, coaches. Good for them.
That's great.
Talking about the Bills' defense, who's been the Buffalo's best defender through the first five games? I haven't checked the Twitter poll. It's been close. It's been fun to watch. So let's do that. The Twitter poll on this question. Who has been the Bills' best defender through the first five games? And we only can put three names up there and other. And on your voting so far on the Twitter poll, the Bills' best defender with 1,600 votes in. That's a lot, Steve. 43%. We got a horse race here. 43%, 44% say Micah Hyde. 41% say Tremaine Edmonds. Only 6% say Tre'Davious White. 9% say somebody else. Let's hear from you. 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Or send in a tweet. We can read it on the tweet sheet. We got a call on the line from Tom in Chickamauga. Tom, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, I'm kind of concerned about the Bills' offense. How much did we get against New England? We got 10 points against
Tonawanda.
So we got...
They average 15 points a game. 14 points a
no,
game.
No, 18.
Oh, they average, yeah, they give up 14 points a game. They average 18 points a game.
Right. We're getting 18 points a game on the average, Tom. We agree with you. They need to score more points. What's the best way to do that?
Tom?
Tom? Tom's
getting hit. We have the quarterback with his gunner arm, and we're not getting long downfield passes. Is it just receivers, or is it the accuracy of Allen?
What do you think of that, Steve? That's a valid question.
Yeah, but I think it's probably both. I think Josh has had a hard time putting it right on, guys, no question about it. I think they've called some shots that were there that they've missed on, and there's been some times when he's forced it into coverage and it turned into interceptions as well. So I don't know. I think you can put it on the receivers and the quarterback on any given play. I don't think there's like one reason these plays aren't working or that, you know, that they're not called or they're not you're not seeing them in this stat sheet. I don't think it's all Josh's fault. I don't think it's all the receiver's fault. I think each one's different. So I, you know, they're just not hitting on enough of them. I think they call them I think they call them more than they get credit for, and for other reasons that either Josh doesn't see it or the guy's covered or the pressure comes or or he scrambles, whatever. For whatever reason, they don't pull the trigger. But I think they get called and the shots are there a lot more than they get credit for because, quite frankly, like you said, Tom, they just don't hit it.
Let's go to the tweet sheet brought to you by Corrigan Moving Systems, the official movers of the Buffalo Bills. Responses to our question, who's been the Bills' best defender through the first five games? And a couple of interesting responses. Ed tweets in, Matt Milano. He says he regularly finishes tackles that I'm not sure other players can make. Very good point, Ed. I think Milano's been outstanding in open field tackles. And I know he's fast, but still that's tough against a running back or a tight end. Matt Milano is there to make the stop almost every time reliably so far this season, five games. And I agree. He might be the Bills' best defender through five games.
Yeah, Chris also says Levi Wallace, the kid is amazing at closing in on wide receivers for pass breakups. We've seen a lot of and I think that's the one thing, too. There have been flashy plays from guys all over the defense. Levi Wallace, Jerry Hughes, Jordan Phillips, Matt Milano, Ed Oliver, Bam Johnson, you know, Levi Wallace, and of course, Poyer and Hyde. I mean, all these guys have flashed, let alone Tremaine Edmonds, who's broken up a couple of passes late in games that were huge. So it's been a whole team effort, and that's one of the reasons we thought this was going to be a really good question for people to answer, because I think it comes down to who your favorite player is, you know, really, because they've all made contributions at some point.
They need more from the offense. We know that. They need more from Josh Allen. We know that. Sean McDermott talked about Josh Allen yesterday. And Josh said after the win at Tennessee, he thought it was his most complete game. And Sean McDermott was asked yesterday if he thought the same thing about Josh Allen's performance against the Tennessee Titans.
Yeah, I thought it was a well-rounded game. Outside of that one play, I thought he was accurate. He got the ball out on time. He understood the look the defense was giving him pre-snap, and that speaks to his preparation. And then I thought from the ability to use his feet, timing-wise on that as well, he was in and out of the pocket on time, and then he checked the ball down when he needed to check the ball down, and so. I thought it was a well-rounded game as far as that goes.
Sean McDermott on Josh Allen's performance against Tennessee. Nobody asked me, but I will say this. I thought it was a dramatic step forward from what Josh looked like and played like against New England. Coming off the concussion protocol, and he talked about it during the week about everything else he had to do to get ready to play just because of the knock to the head and do his homework and practice and get ready for the game. I give him a lot of credit for that. But I thought it was a step forward for Josh Allen. And look, the one interception, okay, guys are going to throw interceptions. This just in, and Josh will throw more. But I thought I didn't fault him so much for that. I thought it was smart decisions, including when to slide, when to run, when to not run, when to run out of bounds, when to stay in bounds on the four-minute offense at the end of the game, where to go with the football. I thought in terms of general overall making good decisions, I thought this was Josh Allen's probably his best game of the year so far against Tennessee.
I think some of it, you kind of get into that mindset of where Josh was last week and maybe, going through the concussion protocols and having all this stuff going on, maybe he felt this was a game where, man, I just got to let everybody else do it. I mean, you know what I mean? Where
yeah.
He said, I didn't have the reps. I didn't have anything like that. I'm not going to try and do all this myself. I got to be more careful. I can't go back into concussion protocol, all of that stuff.
Right. In the back of his mind.
In the back of his mind. So just let me get rid of this ball. Try and just take what's there. And, he completes 72% of his passes, and away they go, to a 14-7 win.
One more thing from Sean McDermott's news conference yesterday. He was asked this question about the Bills' 4-1 schedule, about some doubters that might be out there, and that's okay to doubt, saying maybe the Bills are not for real. They played a weak schedule. We know that. It gets a little weaker in the next couple of weeks, by the way. They played a couple of teams with kickers who really struggled, right? Both the Tennessee Titans and the New York Jets fired their kicker after they played the Bills. And McDermott was asked about that. What do you think people are underestimating the 4-1 Buffalo Bills? Here's what Sean McDermott said.
Our focus really is on what happens inside these walls and just focusing on 1 week at a time, continuing to grow as a football team. So that's all we can control. We're 4-1 and a whisker away from being 5-0. But the fact is we're 4-1 and with a lot of room for growth, a lot of good progress to this point in the season, and a lot of good football that we've played. So I give credit to the players and the staff. We've got to continue to work and grow as we move forward.
Sean McDermott yesterday, I was thinking about this, we didn't ask Lee Smith about this, Steve, but I was thinking about it yesterday. I thought about asking Lee. For Coach McDermott and what we know about him, he loves being in this spot, being 4-1, okay, off to a really good start with – areas he can point to and said, hey, we got to get better at this. We got to cut down penalties. We got to run the ball better. We got to throw the ball better. We got to make better decisions at quarterback. We got to get separation. But he's got a list of things he can hand to his players when they return to work next week and say, do better. We got to do better. And there he is. So I saw the little smile on his face when he answered that question. And the thought occurred to him, oh, I got stuff. I got stuff we're going to work on. But I also got a 4-1 record. That's a good place for him.
I think he's comfortable there. That goes for the defensive side of the football, too. Yeah. I mean, they haven't been perfect. They've been great. But there's been times when the team has busted out on them. And there's a lot of stuff everywhere that they can work on, special teams, offense, defense. And it's easy for him to point to it and say, hey, you got to do better here. You got to do better there. And so you're right. I think secretly, and I think this is a culture and a staff and a team that is like very okay with being under the radar five games into the season.
Yeah.
If you keep winning games, you'll get all the attention you need, believe me.
Call here from Jim in Orchard Park. Go ahead, Jim, you're on the air.
Steve Tasker, future Hall of Famer in Jack. Good afternoon, fellas.
Good afternoon.
Hey, listen, I just want to make a comment about the Buffalo Bills organization. I think they changed and they're going in the right direction. I think years ago, when you had a high draft choice like the Zay Jones, the old organization wouldn't have cut this guy. They'd keep this guy a couple of years, and nobody would want to admit that they made a mistake. But this player wasn't working out for us, so get rid of him and move on. Just your comments on that, fellas.
It's an interesting question, Jim. I see what you're saying. I think, too, it helps when there's a different general manager when they selected him 2 years ago. But, no, you can't. You got to acknowledge that, right? You have to – the Bills will swallow a little bit of their pride having to move on from Zay Jones. But it's for the betterment of the team. I think they're comfortable with that part of it. What do you think?
I think it also comes down from ownership.
What do you mean?
Nobody felt like their job was going to be in jeopardy if they missed on a second-round draft pick or their second-round draft pick wasn't playing well enough. because they can always point to the other guys. Because, listen, there's only, like, what, two guys on this team that were here before this regime took over? Is it like Lorenzo and who? Hauschka or somebody? Hauschka, maybe, yeah. I don't know. Reed Ferguson. Everybody else on this team was signed by this coaching staff and this general manager, almost everybody. So
you're saying they're comfortable?
They don't have to worry about, well, we might have missed on that guy, but we found Levi Wallace. Are you going to dock us for that? You're going to give us a pay raise for Levi Wallace and then dock, you know what I mean? This is not an atmosphere, and because of the ownership and the attitude they have about letting them do their job and make mistakes and learn from the mistakes and do better the next time, that growth mentality comes down from the top, and I think Sean has infected everybody with it. Yeah, they had to say goodbye to a second-round draft pick that now they wish – now there's a couple of guys. There are some guys on the board. You can go back and look at what they missed in that draft. Juju Smith-Schuster, Alvin Kamara were in that draft that were drafted later than Zay. You can always go back and, you know, stick needles in that draft about what you could have done, should have done. But this has got to be about now what we do from here forward. And I think the atmosphere is that, you know what, we're going to get better – because we got better players, and if a guy's not earning his way on the field, we don't care where he came from or how high he was drafted. This is about the here and now, and they're not afraid of having their job hang in the balance because of something they did 3 years ago.
Right.
And I think it's a great place for the organization to be, to feel confident that they're going to get better this week, even after acknowledging a mistake or a guy that something that didn't quite work out as good as they wanted it to 2 years ago, 3 years ago. I think that's a bad place to be in when you have an organization who's going to hold that over you down the line. I think they're in a better place.
You know what else it says to me? It highlights again, and if you haven't learned this following pro football, you should think about it, the random nature of the NFL draft. You don't know who you're drafting. You don't know how their tremendous production, in this case, in Zay Jones' production in college, how that translates to the NFL level. What's the guy's skill set? What's the guy made of? How does he practice? How does he interact with teammates? Where's his head's at? You don't know. No matter how much studying you do, you don't know.
I lived through it myself, and I saw a ton of good teammates and great guys live through it as well. You try to live your life the right way. You have a good value system. Some of these guys come in and they come from different backgrounds, from poor backgrounds, West Coast backgrounds, Southern backgrounds, Northern backgrounds, you know, all that stuff that you from our country is so big. Nobody knows how you're going to react to somebody handing you a check for over $1 million. It changes your life, for at least for the time being. And it's something you never thought about having to deal with. But all of a sudden, it drops it in your lap, and everybody says, wow, I wish somebody would do that to me. Yeah, that's fine. It's easy to say. And you're right. It is a good thing to have that happen to you. But it's a hard thing not to have it affect you in the way you do your job and live your life day to day. That's almost impossible. And so these teams have to decipher the kind of player that will continue to be a good player and a pro and a good person and a right kind of guy when you hand them that check. You think the Steelers are regretting handing Antonio Brown the check they handed him to that turned him into whatever it is he is now? You think there are teams out there that don't, you know, haven't seen players go AWOL when they finally something happened in their career that changed it? A guy goes to the Pro Bowl, and all of a sudden he becomes a different guy. He doesn't have to practice anymore. He doesn't have to go to OTAs. He doesn't have to lift in the offseason. That happens. You got a guy like Carlos Williams 4 years ago when he was here in Buffalo, had a great year as a rookie. Great. His goal was to play in the NFL. Well, hey, that's great. I'm awesome. We're going to draft this kid. He wants to play in the NFL. That's his only goal. Well, he played in there for a year, and his goal was reached. He had no place to go. He ate himself out of the National Football League. That happens to guys. It's a crapshoot.
Yeah.
The draft is. It's a crapshoot. And some guys last a few years, a handful of years, two, three. Some last 16. Yeah. At running back, the most most physically grueling job there is in sports. And he lasts 16 years because he does it right no matter what the money is or no matter how good the team is playing.
Let me squeeze in one more call. Jeff in Kenmore. Go ahead, Jeff. You're on the air with us.
Hey, how you doing? Yeah, I was watching the games, and it seems like the defense, I hear people say, you know, you want more turnovers, you want more things. But it seems like they got back to fundamentals of tackling.
Yeah,
I've always kind of had an issue when I watched games. Didn't matter who, you know, what team, and I'm like, well, how are these guys not tackling? And I guess they were always going for the ball thought to not ball out, and they weren't tackling, or maybe the rule changes in tackling have affected it. But it seems like you got back down to the core fundamentals of tackling the guy first. If there's a chance to pop out the ball, you go for the ball.
Right.
And I think that's – and they're focused on three and out or spin the play instead of trying to get the turnover.
Jeff, it's a really good point. Before the Patriots game, I came across a research that through three games this year, the Patriots were the best tackling team in the NFL. The Bills were right there with them. Two of the best – I think two of the top three tackling teams in the NFL played a couple of Sundays ago here, the Bills in New England. I think it is their strong suit. They're not bad on takeaways. They've got eight. Only six teams in the NFL, I think, get more takeaways than the Buffalo defense, but they are solid tacklers. And that, that's big.
There's no I've said it before on the show. During my time with CBS, when I was looking at film on all these teams, the best defenses statistically were the ones where that first defender that gets to the ball, wherever it's a running back or a wide receiver or whoever's got the ball, the first guy to get there makes the tackle.
Yeah,
he doesn't. You don't see broken tackles against great defenses, and I think I agree with you. I saw that last week. I saw it against the Patriots. This Bills team is one of those where the first guy there makes it, and when a guy does break a tackle, it's like, oh wow. It's almost startling because it does get your attention because it happens so infrequently.
Going to take a break. One Bills Live, presented by Kalana Health, live from the Seneca Studio, Seneca Resorts and Casino. Nothing comes close. Hey, what did we learn from today's show? Brought to you by Skyworks, the official construction equipment rental company of the Buffalo Bills. What did we learn? Kyle Brandt joined us from NFL Network, the host of Good Morning Football, and he talked about what the Bills need to do to win in the playoffs, believe it or not. Here's what he said.
This defense and the schedule right now is good enough that the Bills could win 10 games, get their wild card, and then show up to the playoffs and lose. If they want to win in the playoffs, guys, we've talked about it for a month now. Josh Allen's got to just play a little cleaner. It's even the win in Buffalo, when he plays a pretty clean game, there's just that one interception where he hates throwing the ball away. He hates it. You can tell. Mm-hmm. I don't know about it for you guys, but I got a couple little kids at home, and we can have a nice family outing, and everyone gets along, and we do the pumpkin patch or the apple picking or whatever it is, and it's a great family day. And then as we're driving home, my five-year-old will say one little thing or throw one little fit to ruin a nice time. If we can eliminate that one moment from our family, it would be a perfect Sunday. If we can eliminate the one irritating Josh Allen interception, then we can go places. But no, Steve, the defense can get them to the playoffs, but we got to put up some points once you get there.
There's something to think about there, and we'll talk about that tomorrow. We got a good show coming up tomorrow. Field Yates joins us on Wednesdays from NFL, and I'll do a little fantasy football with him as well from ESPN. And Greg Costell, we moved him up to Wednesday instead of Friday. So tomorrow's show will be a good one, Steve.
Really good. Last show of the week, we're going to close it with a flurry.
Yeah, we're going to finish strong.
Yeah.
On the air at 12 noon tomorrow. Hope you can join us tomorrow. Our final show of the week, as Steve said, Thursday, Friday off for the bye. I want to thank our production assistants, George Blass, Jeff Koltnick, give him a round of applause. Thomas Hollander, Kelly Rude. I'm going slow. We have time. J.J. Torito. Does J.J. even work on our show anymore?
He chimes in, I think. Cross him off.
Kevin Cargis, James Robel, our producer, Jay Harris. We will see you tomorrow at 12 noon with One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health, coming to you from the Seneca Studio in Orchard Park. And this is Buffalo Bills Radio. He doesn't do anything.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.